Blog Talk Radio.
That's what it feels like when you're broke down. When you're broke down, you can't be fixed. All the women in the neighborhood, they say you're damaged. They say they're all damaged.
All right. Good evening, and welcome to the Murray Talk Purple Radio Show, episode 616. Tonight we'll feature all kinds of articles and topics. Some will be opinions, some will be current news, but it'll all be fresh and reasoned independent thought, not from a blue and not from a red perspective. This is Purple Radio. So join us and call me, Bill Murray, your host, live, or set it for downtown download later if you wish. On this show, we're going to talk about, as I say, a variety of different topics, and there's much to get into. We'll get into it right away. But before I do say so, I want you to have the call-in number, and I also want you to have the website. It's easier to say the website first. The website is at murraytalk.com. It's pretty easy. murraytalk.com. And on there, you'll want to open that website, perhaps, at least for the beginning of the show here, because I'm going to talk a little bit about what some of what's on the website, in addition to other things here at the top of the show. The phone number to dial in is the most important thing I want you to know, and that is 516-531-9782. Again, 516-531-9782. That is the dedicated phone line for the Murray Talk series of shows. We'll be using it every week. And our plan right now is to do these shows on Wednesdays at 6 o'clock Eastern, which makes it 3 o'clock Pacific, but for 90 minutes. We had been doing the shows for 2 hours. We're going to make them 90-minute shows, a little more concise and in a little different format, not much, but a little different format as well. So we hope that pleases you. I do have one person who's called in today, and that's my cohort and my co-host, if you want, for these shows. Her name, of course, is Jo Cock. I'm delighted to have her here. Let me open her mic and welcome her to the show. Jo, thank you so much for calling in this evening again.
Hi, Bill. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I can't complain. I hardly ever do.
Okay. No, I'm looking forward to the show. So,
yeah, me too.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, me too. The house is, you didn't mention it, Joe, but the house is spanking clean. It's amazing here. I'm doing this show from the porch on the house in Pompano Beach, Florida. I live in Pompano Beach, Florida, folks, as well as Los Angeles, California. I'm in the Pompano Beach home right now, which is the town immediately north of Fort Lauderdale. And it's directly south of Boca Raton, if you can imagine that in your head. It's southeast Florida, beautiful part of the country, especially this time of year. Winter is the time to be here, Joe. And it's winter now, so this is perfect. And, you know, you're invited, Joe, so I hope you take advantage of it.
Okay. Got to make it across the country here from Oregon. Okay.
Sure. Anybody that can make it to Fort Lauderdale, which is a destination for a lot of people, you know, it's the next town north on the right on the ocean, on the Atlantic Oceans. Very easy to get here from Fort Lauderdale, even from Miami, frankly, or from West Palm Beach. All of these are destinations, and they're all close to Pompano Beach, but none of them closer than Fort Lauderdale. All right. As I said, we're going to talk about a number of things. How's the volume sound or the voice sound here, Joe? Does it sound okay?
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good.
Okay. And I let the music play automatically tonight, which I normally don't do. But again, I want to check with you about the quality of the sound. Was that okay, too? Did you hear the music?
Yeah, I heard it, and it was as good as you get on Blog Talk Radio music. So it was good. Yep, and it started right up.
Yeah. Okay, so this is, again, a slight configuration change for us to do these shows this way. So I just want to check on these things as we move forward. Again, the number to dial if you're listening is 516-531-9782. 516-531-9782. I want to assure people who are listening that this is a different kind of show. I call it a different animal than the shows that they're used to me doing, most of which, of course, are devoted to the issue of child abuse through the Adult Survivors of Child Abuse organization that I founded a dozen years ago at NASCA.org. And we do shows on that five nights a week. In fact, there'll be one at 8 o'clock this evening as well. But 90 minutes from now, we'll be able to take a half hour between the two shows for the first time. So that's another of the changes. It's a little shorter tonight than normal, but I think this is going to be comfortable for everybody, Joe.
I think so, yeah.
Now, in the past, I have provided material on a page that I call the articles page. I'm not going to do that tonight. We're going to see how it goes with me simply presenting topics and articles and, of course, inviting you, Joe, and anyone who calls in to do the same. We are not constricted by having to talk only about, there's a lot of issues, and it's very important. But, you know, we're not going to have to talk solely about child abuse and trauma issues. We're going to talk about politics if we want. We're going to talk about issues of all kinds if we want. We'll talk about, the weather. The weather, by the way, is beautiful here. we'll talk about, I like to talk about animals. We're going to always talk about animals on these shows, as Joe always looks forward to that. I know.
Oh, yeah.
So there's some things that are just attracted to me that are going to end up on the show as kind of features, but also current news and opinion pieces and everything else mixed in. But the difference on this show, the basic difference is one would find if one perused for talk radio shows, that as soon as you hit one of them, you can pretty much figure out within a couple of minutes what their perspective is. And generally speaking, you're going to find radio shows that are either from a blue or a red perspective, very, very tribal, and encamped in one extreme or the other. And on those shows, usually what you hear is, yes, there are presentations of topics, but they're mostly talking point type topics, and they very rarely encourage participation from, quote, the other side, unquote. Well, we don't do that here. My recognition is that the world is full of, of gray. In other words, not everything is black and not everything is white. No matter what your perspective is, there's a lot of gray in the world. And as a matter of fact, I believe the world is pretty colorful. So rather than blue or red, we're doing purple radio shows. Purple means that we're going to encourage people from every persuasion to call in. They'll all be given their due time to express their position on any topic that might come up, and that's fine. But we're going to agree to disagree because I believe that it's in the possibility of having actual discussion that we might find some common ground and actually make some difference in America today. I mean, we are really, really separated from each other, and we'll talk a little bit about politics in that sense too. But without taking sides, let me just say that the two-party system that we have are about as far apart as you can get, and neither one really wants to listen to the other. So the fact of the matter is, though, studies show that perhaps 20% of the population is very blue and 20% is very red, and they're not persuadable. But that still means that 60% of the country is persuadable. They may be red or blue people, if you want to call it that. I call them purple people because there's some degree to which they're willing to have talk with others who may not have the same point of view, and in the process you know, perhaps come to some joint agreement that would move us forward in our country. That's the concept, Joe. And you've done these shows with me for a while now. It's something I'm excited for people to find out about us. And I mean, how do you feel about it, Joe?
Yeah, I think it's something that a lot of people are really needing, because it's hard to balance, to get a balanced news anywhere now. So, yep, I think it's going to be valuable. People are calling in, should be calling in right now.
I wish they would. Right now would be a good time to call in, Joe, because there's nobody else on the panel.
Right.
That's
yeah.
Okay. But I did invite a few people. I put out posts and notices. I put out email and so forth. And I'm hoping that it'll attract a few voices. Now, there may be people listening right now. And I want them to know that they don't have to have any perspective, and they don't ever have to declare a perspective to join this show. It's simply, I hope, a comfortable conversation between people who possibly have very different backgrounds, and that's fine. There's no problem. Melting pot. You know, this is what we are. That is the concept of America, is that all of us together matter, not any one individual over any other, anyone or any one side, if you want, over another side. We're not tribal. You know, we're communal, and that's what this show is. It's a communal show where anybody can feel comfortable joining in. And again, the number is 516-531-9782. 516-531-9782. The dedicated number for all the shows that we do here in this series at Murray Talk Purple Radio. I'm going to start the show, though, with a little bit of a different twist. As I said, I'd like people to go to murraytalk.com for the next little segment, because we've made a bunch of changes to the website, and that's the first thing I'd like to talk about, Joe. And, of course, you're aware and familiar with what I'm going to go to. But if they go to the website, what they're going to find is that we have two basic, and maybe even expand, it may expand beyond this, but two basic subjects that we cover. The media that we're doing tonight is, of course, the original one, and we will continue to do shows on the radio and perhaps on television, and we call that Purple Media. But the other thing that we're going to be doing through Murray Talk is I'm going to be offering what I call Purple Life Coaching. Now, Purple Life Coaching, again, the word purple indicates that there's a lot of different perspectives that I'm going to use when I work with folks, that I am extremely experienced and have a lot of background in many, many approaches to recovery or to just improving your life. And a life coach, of course, is someone who, dare I say, is kind of like a mentor, a counselor, a guide, a sponsor. It's a person that helps you along the way. And in many cases will hold your hand, at least in early recovery, and certainly direct you in ways that, you know, you'll find fulfilling. That's the whole idea, is to find a life coach who is, you know, someone you believe in and someone whose direction you might follow to some degree, the whole idea being to improve your life. And if people go on the murraytalk.com front page, I'd like them to click briefly on the first of the two subjects that's listed, which is the Purple Life Coaching, the newer of the things we're doing. And when they click there, they're going to go to our life coaching page, and that is broken up into three pieces. And I'm not going to read all of this, but this is where you go if you want to understand not only what Purple Life Coaching is and what it is, what it's like to take back your world, really, using life coaching, but also our approach here, our approach at Purple Life Coaching, and then how to set up a session and a schedule. And by the way, one of the things that I make available to people is a free consultation call of 15 or 20 minutes with me, and that's on the website too. Won't charge them a cent for that, and see if we feel like we're a good fit for each other and so forth. And then we have reduced rates as well. So a lot of reasons to go there and check it out. And I don't know what is worth mentioning here, Joe. Well, let me pause for you to make a comment, because you've been familiar with me setting this up as we've gone along, and perhaps have a comment at this point.
Okay. Well, I like the way that you divided up recovery, which is taking back your world via life coaching. And it's something that is really helpful. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to necessarily get help from a professional like a psychiatrist, psychologist. Sometimes you just want to bounce something off somebody else, or you want to get some what worked for you and that kind of thing. And so I think that was great. And then there's a lot of great information on that, our approach on how you approach people, how and if I were looking for recovery and a life coach, I would definitely go through that our approach page and just sort of get an idea of where you're coming from. And then it's very easy to schedule a session on the scheduling page. So I like how it's set up, and I'm looking forward to your work with others and to your help with others.
Yeah, and of course, I'm not new to this. I am new to having a life coaching business, yes, but I have been working with people for really decades. I myself am in recovery, as I, let people know, over 35 years worth of recovery under my belt personally. And during that whole time, I've been working with people who are newer than me, certainly. And in the last, certainly NASCA, for example, is a sample of the fact that we have thousands of people in NASCA. I have worked with thousands of people, sometimes just for a few calls, sometimes with an ongoing relationship that lasts quite a while. But I can tell you that you mentioned the difference between psychology and psychiatry and so forth. One big difference is this is way less expensive, and it's very practical. You know, if you go to a shrink, you might spend like $500 an hour for some shrinks, and $300 for many. If you go to a psychologist, same thing. You'll spend a couple hundred dollars an hour at least, not here. I think that it's a very practical way to get the benefit of experience, not from someone who's just book learned, which I certainly am, but I've also worked with so many people. I have a lot of background of my own, and background of working with, virtually every kind of situation you can imagine I have encountered, and many, many of them, hundreds of them, with thousands of people. So I hope they will go through the website. And, of course, this and the radio show are both money-making, if you want, ventures for us. Let's be honest, Joe is a part of this. In fact, he's the person that sets up the schedules and so forth for us, and you'll find her contact information here as well. But you can call me for a free introductory 15-20 minute phone call or whatever on the scheduling page. It gives you that information, how to do that, and I'm happy to get to know you a little bit in that period of time, and you to know me a little bit in that period of time, and we will see if there's a good fit and then move forward with Joe if scheduling is appropriate. The introductory consultation actually quite cheap, and then we've figured out a way to have multiple sessions at reduced prices too. So the point is that this is very practical. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. If you are struggling, and this is not just for survivors of child abuse, but it's for people who are are concerned with how their life is going, and it's not going very well, and they're not even sure. I think my typical clientele might consist of really middle class and even upper class people who have achieved a certain amount of American dream, but aren't happy and don't know why. I understand that, that you're supposed to, we have been taught this concept, excuse me, John, choking. One second.
Okay. Yeah. Don't need to choke on the air, but yeah.
No.
Good.
ginger ale here.
Good.
And, you know, so that person that maybe has achieved even the upper class status, but, you know, it's not about, they find out it's not about the big house and the boat and, you know, being able to send their kids to great colleges. They're still unhappy. How do you get to a place where you're comfortable inside yourself? That's what I always promise is the basic goal of recovery of any kind, is a certain degree of peace, if you want to call it, or serenity or comfort or just satisfaction with one's life. That's what I offer. And I don't think you can, and you'll do that yourself. If you're a client of mine, you'll do that yourself, but you'll get a lot of help. And it's up to you. You put the work in, you get the results out. But I can tell you, I've used this approach over and over and over with people with huge success. And I'm absolutely sure that anybody that comes forward will find it beneficial to work with me. As I say, I'm very practical. By the way, I use a lot of comedy. You know, I use humor. I say on the approach page that I often use humor, and I can laugh at myself today because, after all, there's so much material to work with me, so much I can laugh at. But really, you know, I hope people understand that the levity that's involved in some of these things is, you know, behind some being deadly serious. But there's no reason you can't, you know, have fun when you're recovering too, you know. Especially when you have a kind of a partner doing it with you, you know, you're not alone anymore. You're not lost anymore. You have somebody that'll, you know, lead you, and, you know, will share back with you some of the things that have happened with him in his life and what he's done about it. I happen also to be a drug and alcohol substance abuser, but I'm sober and clean, 35 years, 37 years. So I have a lot of experience in that part of life. As well as just taking on life's terms, as I say, as I use the term I use. And I now really thrive. I can't stop myself from being too busy. Joe can tell you this. Every time I think I'm done, I find another thing to do. Right, Joe?
Yep. Yeah.
So, the first part of this show is a bit of an advertisement, but... you know, I think it's worth people checking out the MurrayTalk.com page and then going to, for the first time perhaps, the Purple Life Coaching section, where they will find that we are happy to accommodate, you know, people of every background and every stripe. And frankly, if you don't have a lot of money, we'll make accommodations and so forth. But, you know, it's an attempt to pass on what's been, you know, given to me. What I've learned in all these years, it has a lot of value, and I want people to take advantage of what I can offer. So that's it. Purple Life Coaching. Now, I usually also do a commercial in here somewhere. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that tonight. Let's see. Oh, yeah, here's one. Let me do this. Are you looking for a place to find a life coach? Well, you don't have to look anymore. You've found one at MurrayTalk.com, Purple Life Coaching. That's right. This is Bill Murray, and with well over 3.5 decades of recovery under my belt, I'm now offering the ability to contact me for sessions on Purple Life Coaching, where you'll hear perspectives of every different kind and years of experience behind it to bring you a quality of life that perhaps you've never experienced before, including serenity, peace, comfort, and simply calmness. Are you not satisfied with your life? Then check out MurrayTalk.com and Purple Life Coaching. Thank you for listening.
Hey, very cool.
How was that? That was an on-the-fly commercial, not bad.
Yeah.
I should go back and cut that out and just use it over and over. I hardly even made a mistake.
Yeah.
All right. On with the show. This show is not about Purple Life Coaching. That's just an ad part of it. But I did want to get people familiar with Murray Talk in general. And it's the other half of what we're doing here. We will certainly promote the radio shows as we do the life coaching and vice versa. So they're going to support each other as well, too. Now, I want people to call in on the guest number, 516-531-9782. 516-531-9782. Now, I know there are people listening right now, and Joe and I are getting lonely here. Well, we can do the show together, but it's okay if other people want to, you know, butt in. No, we want them to butt in. It's not butting in. This is supposed to be a talk show where we invite people to call in and participate. And I'll tell you, maybe it'll help if I get into a topic or two here to begin the show. So let me do that. Let me close a couple of pages and then go back to where I should be, which is over here. You know, we cover lots of territory on Murray Talk. And as I say, you know, politics is one of them. And I'm going to just mention politics first to get it out of the way, frankly. But we have, you know, just experienced a caucus and then a primary in the Democratic side of things. Kind of a mess in Iowa. I'm sure you're familiar with it. But for those who are not, they couldn't figure out who won. Now, they've had 4 years to get ready for the next Iowa caucus because they only happen every 4 years, and Iowa is always the first one to go. It's a small state. It's not a representative state. You know, it's a middle-of-the-country state. It doesn't have a lot of delegates to offer, but because it's the first caucus, it matters how people come out of that, if you want, because it's then on 1 week later to what happened last night, which was New Hampshire Tuesday night. So the Iowa caucus was such a mess, they couldn't figure out who had cast votes for whom. That was partly they blamed it on the app, the application they used. Yeah, but, I mean, people are behind, you know, this system. And I think there should always be at least a paper ballot system. So in case there's a snafu with a piece of software, you can go back and count the ballots. You know, it's not even that big of a state in Iowa, but they screwed it up. So it came up that it ends up that, you know, of the top tier, we're only going to talk the top tier people, obviously, here anyway, the top tier candidates were Pete Buttigieg, who is the mayor, came out on top, slightly on top of his opponents. And the other opponents in the race are Bernie Sanders, who came out second, pretty close to Pete. And then lower than that, and kind of surprisingly lower than that, were Amy Klobuchar, but even more surprising, Biden and Warren. And those two were considered sort of candidates with a lot of, you know, meat on the bone for people to chew. But it turns out that they didn't do so well. So same thing repeated last night. And last night was New Hampshire, and it was called a primary, not a caucus. There's a difference in the two in how they're run. But the basic idea is, you know, people in each state and in subsequent states coming up here quickly will cast votes for their favorite Democratic candidate, trying to narrow down the field from the 20 that we saw in original, you know, broadcasts on stages and stuff. And now it is narrowing down. In fact, Mr. Yang, the entrepreneur, dropped out of the race after last night. He didn't do well. And he said, you know, he'd given it his best all, and he dropped out. So we're now down to really five perhaps serious candidates, and those will narrow down even more, and a few others. But the candidates last night came out Bernie Sanders first, slightly, over Pete Buttigieg, so they flipped. And then Amy Klobuchar, which was kind of surprised people, but she came out third, and that's strong for her because she's not expected to do well in these smaller states that are not her territory, if you want, of the country. And then Biden and Warren doing pretty poorly. They dropped the percentage of people that they had been carrying in the polls and so forth as we move forward. And next is going to be some really important caucus states, including a whole group of them in early March. I think there's 14 on one. It's called Super Tuesday. So between South Carolina and Nevada or Arizona, one of those two, they'll be happening before Super Tuesday, and then Super Tuesday, 14 states. It's about a third of the country that votes on these things will have been tallied, and that by that time is usually when we know who is likely to be the candidate. Not always, but it's likely, and people will drop out as we go forward in all these cases. So are you familiar with what happened on the Democratic side, or have any comments here, Joe?
Well, what I find is curious is you had mentioned that both Iowa and New Hampshire are the smaller states. They don't have a lot of representatives, and so perhaps the strategy used by Biden and others was, okay, I'm going to focus on the big guys, the big states, and then not spread myself too thin going through all 50 of the states. And I didn't know if that perhaps may have happened. But
no, I've got to tell
know.
You that
no?
They were all working hard to win something. You know, it's really important.
Okay.
It's perceived as being very important to win at least one of these two. To be a viable candidate. Now, that doesn't mean Biden and Warren are out of it, because they do have large names and big followings.
Mm-hmm.
But they were competing,
mm-hmm.
is my point, in both these states.
Okay.
Heavily. Oh, heavily, yeah. In fact, the fact that Amy Klobuchar came out ahead of them is surprising.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not even in the top three. They're 4 and 5, respectively. And going into South Carolina and then the I forget if it's sorry, folks, if it's Nebraska or Arizona, one of those two, followed by a week later, Super Tuesday in early March. Everybody's, you know, but those who are not doing well, like Yang, dropped out. There's still one candidate who didn't participate, who is a viable candidate, and that's Bloomberg, the ex-mayor of New York City. He's going to self-finance his own campaign, has already done so, started to do so, but he's not participating in these first primaries. He has a big enough name, he feels, and enough money behind him. He's not going to rely on donors elsewhere and so forth. So, but all of these candidates they don't take these first few states lightly. It's important to get kind of off the ground running. Yeah.
Okay.
Now,
so which state
on the
is the one here, that? Oh, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Oh, okay. Which state is the one there? As goes the state, so goes the country. Is it Maine or
Ohio?
Is it
Ohio?
Ohio. Oh. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay.
But also, it's not the only state, but it became known some time back that, you know, if you could persuade, say, Pennsylvania and Ohio, you had a good chance. You know, you don't have to carry more states, you have to carry states that have bigger populations, because of course we have an electoral college system eventually for the president, and a similar system for delegates to choose candidates. They're designated by the size of the population, more or less, and that means that, you know, the big states have more at stake for each candidate. But if you can gather together a whole bunch of small states and one or two big states, you can win. Which is what happened with Trump, frankly. And let me talk about Trump. You know, Trump was also a candidate. They held a Republican primary too, and he easily won. Not surprising. But he does have a couple of people that are running against him, to make it, you know, to be honest and fair. But he has such a hold, as is common anyway with an incumbent president, no matter which party. They would have a big hold on their party because They're considered the leader of the party while they're president, and if they have a second term possibly coming up, the party's going to pretty much support them for a second term, unless they've done something horrible, horrible. And Trump has just been found to be he was acquitted of in the trial, and you know, again, this was a very partisan pursuit, and the only person that voted against his own party was Romney, the only senator in the Senate who voted guilty. He voted guilty that he believes that Trump had crossed the line with his activities being beyond what we can accept as high crimes and misdemeanors, which is the measurement they use in the impeachment process. Other than that, it was all party lines. And, you know, Romney said he's a Mormon. He really is deeply involved with his faith. He had taken a promise to follow the Constitution. He really didn't feel that for both those reasons, he could, in good conscience, support the president on one of the two counts. Now, he found him not guilty on the second count, but the first count, which was the count that I just described, he did vote guilty on that. Other than that, straight party lines all across the way, and so that means the impeachment process is over. Not the complaint process, Joe. You know. And, of course, no sooner did Trump feel vindicated than he began campaigning. You know, of course. And as part of his campaign stump speech is going to be how those darn people, you know, tried to get me and they couldn't get me down and I'm the winner and blah, blah, blah. He says that stuff all the time. We all know that. You know, that's not being, I'm not criticizing him. I'm just, and he's a bloviator, you know, which we all know. And that's what we should expect from him. We shouldn't expect different, you know. So anyway, that's the kind of, I think, the highlights of the politics that we need to get into for tonight. It does catch us up, though, with where we are going into the next couple of primaries and then Super Tuesday in early March, which I will, of course, talk about then. But as I said, you can either win several big states and very few small states, or a whole bunch of small states and one or two big states and win the presidency. So there are some states that are absolutely guaranteed. California is one of them. There's nothing that a candidate on the Republican side could do at this point to persuade California to vote for a presidential candidate who was a Republican. All their delegates are gone. And it's a big state, so it's a lot of votes, you know. And when you have states like that, those you do kind of have to accept or even call it write off that there's no use competing there. You'll still go. You'll see President Trump in California, but he knows that in his heart of hearts, he's not there to try and win California. He's there to try and talk before an audience that includes a huge national audience that does follow him and so forth. So, but this is where we find ourselves in today's world, extremely separate. I think it's sad. I wish there was a purple party, something in the middle. And as far as the candidates are concerned, Pete Buttigieg is considered to be a more moderate candidate than, say, a Bernie Sanders or an Elizabeth Warren. And so is Joe Biden and Amy, too, I think. There are groups of them who are less left-wing than others. I'd say Warren and Bernie and Sanders are both in the extremes, while the other three that I've mentioned are more moderate. And perhaps Pete Buttigieg did so well in Iowa because he is, you know, he is perceived as someone that's kind of down the middle, kind of fair and that kind of thing, and an average Joe, if you want. So depends on what the party ends up wanting to see, you know, how they want to see themselves represented. But they could pick Warren just as easily if Super Tuesday goes a different way. So this is going to be fierce the next 3 weeks, fierce fighting. We'll see a lot about it on the news, the newspapers. By the way, mentioning that, Joe, you know, as I say, I'm not going to be creating the page. The page was costing me so much time and energy, the articles page, but I am still reading all the materials, and I'm familiar with them, and I want people to know that I don't read from just one source. And this is important to note. If you're interested in being purple, you cannot rely on any one or even two sources for your news. Certainly not social media for your news. But I read subscriptions to the Times, to the Wall Street Journal, to the LA Times, the New York Times, the LA Times, the Washington Post, and a bunch of magazines, CNN generally, because of the cable channels, it's the most central of them. MSNBC is extremely left, and Fox is extremely right, so I don't bother with them. And I don't really want to hear talking points. I want to hear journalism. Well, you can depend on that with the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. So I read them, and they have opinion from both sides sometimes, absolutely. But they express it as that. And they don't come on the television show and say, this is the way it ought to be, or it has to be, you know, and these other people are all wrong. Well, they're not wrong. They have a different perspective, and that's valid. So I do want people to know that when they're listening to Bill Murray, he is trying to be as fair and as balanced and as journalistic. That is in my background. I'm a journalist, and also have worked in the show business arena of different kinds of show business, including documentaries and sitcoms and movies of the week and on and on and on. And that's my background, but also journalism. And I actually believe in true journalism, which is telling both sides of something and helping people come to their own conclusion, or inviting them to have a discussion, in this case on our show, by calling in and expressing themselves. And that's fine. You know, nobody's right and nobody's wrong, unless they don't agree with me, Joe. No, I'm kidding. There is that one exception, of course.
Yeah, of course. Oh, yeah, well. Yeah. You're going fine, Joe. So I am.
All right, so. That's... All right. getting on to a new topic, that's what that meant. We're going to move along. And mm-hmm. You have something you'd like to contribute to that. I should give you that opportunity, of course, Joe.
No, I'm ready.
No.
Move on.
Okay. Moving on. Geez, I can't believe how many people are upset about this coronavirus virus thing. I guess it's bad, but of course it's bad. But... you know, there's so much that we could be complaining about, frankly, in the world. But, you know, it's starting in China. They have let it sneak out into there's a cruise ship that's trapped now in the, I think it's in a harbor or a port in Japan. They won't let it in. It's a Japanese cruise ship. It's full of people with this virus. And the crew is beside themselves because they don't have a way to escape it. The crew who is serving a sick population is getting sick too, and it does kill people. Now, that's a big deal. I understand that. But when there are so many other issues that, you know, we could spend our energy on, and I have seen this virus story over and over and over and over. I guess it's a popular story is the only way I could say it. But it is getting a lot of traction. And from my perspective, sometimes a little more than it deserves when, you know, you could use the column space and the time and energy of these journalists to, you know, talk about other issues. And that's part of the problem of being so kind of one-sided with anything, you know, that it doesn't leave space for other materials. There's only a finite amount. We're doing 90 minutes on this show. There will be stuff that we might want to talk about won't fit in 90 minutes. So we have to be judicious about what topics we do decide to present, certainly, but also not overlook things that are really important. I mean, we talk about the quality of life in our country, and there are so many issues that have gone by the wayside, especially because of the fight in immigration terms, first in the House of Representatives and then in the Senate, that's taken month after month after month of air out of the balloon, right? It's taken energy out of the room. They haven't done anything else in Congress for quite some time. And what a shame. You know, I'm thinking of things like, infrastructure improvements. Geez, we got a lot of work we could do on our roads and bridges and tunnels and airports and things like that, ports, to really improve everybody's life. That, you know, you fix up a highway or a bridge, that's for thousands and thousands of people at a time. In fact, you know, here's another story I did want to touch on tonight. The budget that's been presented by Mr. Trump, which is going to be considered here, is you know what the number is?
How
about
nope.
$4.8 trillion. $4.8 trillion. Now, I don't know how to wrap my head around that number, really. But I do know I do know that in the budget, I've seen some graphic representations of what services would be added to and what might be cut back and so forth. And basically, the budget is something that is set by the president, gets passed to the Congress, because Congress has the purse, right? They have the strings of the purse, they say. And that means that they ultimately will have a big say on what the final budget looks like. But I will just say that in Trump's budget, the military does very well, okay, and wins by, you know, a considerable amount, increasing their budget by a considerable amount. And almost everything else drops, at least to some degree. Now, not all to a tremendous degree. Senior citizens, you'll be having to hear, are pretty much protected with their Medicaid, for example, Medicare, for example. And so that's a good thing for us, you and I both,
mm-hmm.
and many of our listeners. Other things take a hit, so a lot of the social programs, in other words, are going to suffer to some degree, yet the budget has increased dramatically and the military is doing extremely well. So, you know, what are you going to do? You know, he's the president. He gets to present the budget. It's now up to the Congress to parse that budget to figure out what parts of it they're going to go along with. But I tell you, when you talk about $4.8 trillion, you're talking real money then, you know? It seems to me.
Yeah. Do you know what the budget has been? Do you know what the budget has been? Last year's budget or anything?
I'd have to look it up. Oh. I don't know. It wasn't part of the story I read, but I do know that it's a significant increase. Yeah. And also
the shifting of the money is coming. Okay. And that money is coming from where?
Well, this is our budget. This comes from our taxes and so forth. We are running a deficit. There's been no proposition to raise taxes. But again, if you want to follow the politics of the thing, and you're afraid of taxes, you'd probably not want a Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren to win, for example, because their examples of what they'd like to do with the country are quite extravagant and extremely expensive. And there is no proposition way to pay for these things other than really raising taxes. But that, I'm not blaming them. I'm saying any politician that wants to increase something has to find a way to pay for it. Sometimes it's by reducing costs elsewhere, which is part of what Trump proposed. Sometimes it's by increasing income, but he has not proposed that as far as I know. No, I've not read anything about that.
Interesting. Okay.
However, I can say that we keep extending our deficit out, and I think if we passed this budget the way it was, and my understanding was it would take about 30 years to even have a chance to bring down the deficit. This is why it's so important for people to follow some of this, because ultimately we'll be paying for this year's budget for 30 years and next year's budget for 30 years more and the next year's for 35 years more. And that's how it works. Go ahead, Joe.
And okay. I'm a simple, just person here who always has to live within my budget, and I don't extend credit cards. I don't do any of that. How come our country doesn't have to? I mean, we had a no deficit in my lifetime, I remember. I can't remember exactly who was president then, but we actually got rid of the deficit then. And
we had a balanced budget under Clinton is the last time I know of it. He had managed to get a balanced budget that did not mean that there wasn't still a deficit to pay off, but the deficits were nothing like they are now. And with the events of 9/11 and all the wars that have followed that, that's been very expensive for us. We keep adding to our deficit because our budgets keep increasing, especially as it regards the military, which is important, no question. We all want a military, sure, but do we all want to be involved in as much as we have been in some of these foreign wars? That's a question that people should be asking themselves and deciding for themselves. I'm not telling them what to decide. I tell you what, I believe in the military. I don't mind saying that. I'm a huge defender of the military and the need for one, absolutely. But there are limits too, and we don't seem to understand that there are limits. You do, but not government.
Mm-hmm.
Government simply prints more money, or just keeps voting on extending the deficit. You know, that's what they do. They just simply allow themselves permission. They give themselves permission in Congress to say, "Oh well, we'll handle it another time," meaning 30 years from now, maybe.
Yeah, let our kids and grandkids handle it. Oh, well,
right.
Thanks a lot.
That's exactly right. And that's kind of why I think we ought to be thinking purple. Probably everybody has to do a little belt tightening. Probably we should be taxing, and I'm not going to be popular saying this, but the very, very wealthy should have some.
I agree. They're getting benefit out of it. They should pay it. Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. A lessening of all the loopholes and all like that. Maybe there should be a flat tax once you're worth several billion dollars and up. Maybe there should be an annual flat tax for you. That would be beneficial, of course. There's lots of ways you could approach this, but are they popular is the question, and the no is the answer. They're not. Not enough to pass Congress, and that's what they'd have to do.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, popular with who? that would be popular with me and the other people I have in my apartment complex, but yes, Congress, that's the one. Okay.
Right. So, frankly, I mean, the elections are important for that reason. You get to choose who represents you. You may not be able to choose between anybody but a Republican and a Democrat. That's the unfortunate part. There are no other choices, pretty much, in our system. But you still get to represent yourself in terms of voting for who you want to be your representative, your congressman, or your senator, as well as your president. All of these are extremely important. All the way down to the municipal level, they're important. Because, our cities tax us too. Our sewer taxes are through the roof now, and our electric taxes are through the roof in California. Ridiculous. But we keep voting the politicians in who keep voting for increasing these fees and taxes. because that's how they find ways to maybe feed the homeless or some other thing, you know, whatever it is that's on the popular stuff that they feel they must vote for or they won't win their next term, they have to find a way to pay for it. That's politics.
Mm.
I'm not a politician, as you can tell. You know, I would not go for that.
But why don't they use the U.S. government's approach and just say, we'll go into a deficit? Okay. Yeah, that's cool.
Who, cities? They do.
Yeah,
they
do. Cities. Oh, they go into a deficit?
They do. Sure. Certain cities do. Absolutely. But, you know, cities raise taxes they send on to the federal government. Then the federal government turns around and sends money, or the state. And the federal government and the state turn around and give grants back to the city for different programs. It's a shill game that's going on in our government. And there is nobody that's talking in terms of, like, being an accountant and having accountability, which is what the word means, right? Because you'd have to have an independent base supporting you, and there is no independent base. There's one independent senator, I believe it is. Is that Bernie? I think it is Bernie. But he's running as a Democrat anyway. And all the rest are Republicans and Democrats. So, that's where we find ourselves in today's world.
Hi.
Oh, boy. Sigh, right? Sigh.
Yep, big sigh.
All right, I'm very interested in other things, so we're going to move on.
Good.
One of the things that I'm interested in is public service and public safety. I have a kind of a cool story to relate to you, I think, in terms of public safety, because I found that that the Los Angeles Fire Department is now going to be buying the first ever electric fire engine. I thought that was pretty cool. It's all electric. They've actually borrowed one for 3 or 4 months and tested it out, and they agree that it's great. It's really worked great. Now, this comes from the LA Community Policing website and the news that's there every day. It's updated. So I'm going to quickly go there and be accurate as I read this. But I know that the LAFD has, I believe it's roughly 130 stations all over the city. This is just the city, which is a huge city. Each station has, because I helped pass this, has not only a pumper, which is called an engine, but also every one of them has an EMT element. It has a ambulance. All firefighters are paramedically trained now, and every ambulance has EMTs aboard too. So everywhere in the city, 130 stations or whatever, there's at least a pumper and an ambulance. And in many stations, there's a ladder truck, right? A hook and ladder, they call it sometimes. But for the first time, they are now going to have a electric hybrid fire engine, which will help reduce noise and harmful, diesel emissions, because they run on diesel. But also it'll have extra capabilities that are uncommon to many fire engines because of its electrical, hookups and stuff. Now, my question is, where are they going to find a place to plug it in? Jeez.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. The little Tesla station? I don't know.
Yeah.
That was my first question.
Yeah. It's going to be a $1.2 million truck. It's called a Rosenbauer Concept Fire Truck. And it's the equivalent price of a ladder truck, one of the hook and ladders I spoke about. So it's not much more expensive than the hook and ladder, although they are smaller. Engines are smaller size than a hook and ladder. They're still very powerful units. And you need an engine to even if you have a hook and ladder, because the engine's the one that pumps all the water. Anyway, I thought that was a pretty cool story. You know, it was a century ago that the LA Fire Department made this historic switch going from horse-drawn fire engines to motorized. And now, 100 years later, the first electric fire truck. I think it's terrific. I really, that kind of stuff excites me. I don't know. I'm easy to please.
Yeah. Okay. I have a question, though. Okay.
Of course.
How come this electric hybrid could be huge like a fire engine, but when we get an electric hybrid car, it's a little smart car or, a pre-squished compact car?
Well, I don't know how many batteries you can stick in a bigger car. It's really a matter of that than anything else. They could build them bigger if they wanted to, but people are, in general, happier with smaller cars today than they used to be. So they've kind of accepted the concept that smaller is easier to park and maybe doesn't take as long to plug in. Maybe it doesn't go as far either, but still, if you can go more than 100 miles on each tank or, each charge, that usually accommodates our needs. And when we get home, we plug it back in and go to bed, Very few of us need something that goes much more than that. And even so, that's what a hybrid does. It also will have a diesel engine in other words, too. But it will try to run as often as possible on the electricity. And when it can't, it'll switch over to the diesel. So, again, that's what a hybrid can do in an automobile. Mm-hmm. It's usually gas and electric, gas and electric hybrid means that they can accommodate either one. So,
good.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Now, here's another public safety. I think it's a public safety issue that I thought was worthy of bringing up. I'm also very involved in communities of all different kinds and have been for years. And at one point I was on the LA Sheriff's Department Clergy Council. The Clergy Council consisted of mostly ministers and so forth. And of course I wasn't one, and I reminded them I wasn't one when I got the invitation. They said, "We know what you do and you're a community builder and, we like your perspective. So come on in and help us." So it was me, about 50 black ministers, and a couple of people from Scientology and Christian Science. Well, one of them, turns out, was indicted last week for stealing $11 million from the Church of Christian Science. I can't believe this. How could a person who rises to the level of being, such an important person, He's the former chairman of the board for the Fifth Church of Christ Scientists, they call it. And over time, he had access to accounts that allowed him to drain off $11 million that they know of into phony companies that he set up that he used to cover his tracks. He pretended he was a real estate developer, and he sent this money through his false, fake real estate company. 55 years old. Guy should be thrown the book at. I don't know what penalty he might face. He'll have to pay the money back. Here it is. It says if he was found convicted, his sentence is scheduled for May 18th. He could be facing a statutory maximum penalty of 60 years in federal prison. Good. What was he thinking? And here's an example of, we talk about how bad government is. What about religion? Aren't they supposed to have our best interests at heart? We're their constituents in the church. Church is. Anyway, what's your comment on this?
Well, I always thought they had a higher power looking over them. But also, where are the checks and balances? So, he probably got away with it and said, "Hey, I'm going to keep continue until I get caught or something." But yeah, I mean, if he doesn't get caught in his first million, why stop there?
He was hired in 2001 as the church's facilities manager, and he actually joined the church in 2005. He wasn't a member, so he was hired as a professional, and he ultimately served as its local chairperson. In that capacity, he had control over the church's financial assets. I'm reading a little of this, so help me. here, to be accurate, including some of its bank accounts. And from August 2006 till 2016, December, he caused the church to make checks and other payments to fictitious companies, as they said. He wasn't caught. He spent, he oversaw the sale of approximately $12.8 million of a property they owned in Hollywood, very valuable property. And I think he drained off an awful lot of that money into the 11 point something that he eventually stole, 11.4. So, you know, he did get caught. Obviously, he spent $2 million on his own home, purchased a home from that. Yeah, of course. You know.
Wow.
But good grief. Amazing. Now, this, I believe, now, if it wasn't him, it was the next in line with him that was serving on the clergy council with me. At some point, I don't know them well, but I know that they were there. I certainly didn't know every minister there either. But, you know, we'd have meetings periodically, every month actually for a while there, and then bigger meetings every few months where we'd all get together and the sheriff would bring up topics that he wanted input from the sort of the ministerial community. He called it the clergy council. And I was a member. I'm not a reverend, never have been, but I was invited to participate and did so for quite a number of years. So I thought that was a story worthy of bringing up tonight.
Interesting.
We have a number of things that I'm looking for, one of which is going to be animal stories. I know you like animal stories, and then we're running out of time already. That's how fast these shows go. There's a lot of material that we could do on these shows. And I have put a few things aside, and I'm waiting for a message to load here, that I will find something that will please you in terms of animals. Again, you're listening to Murray Talk Radio, which is Purple Radio. The number to dial is 516-531-9782. That's the dedicated number that we will be using every Wednesday on this series of shows. So you can write it down, put it in your phone or whatever, and it's always going to be the same number. All right. I have a cool story first before the animal story. This is about the kindness of Australian strangers. It comes from the New York Times. You know, Australia's bushfires have caused a lot of pain and a lot of damage and so forth. But there are people that get in there and help. They volunteer. They came from L.A. There were firefighters that flew in from L.A. and helped them. Anyway, this story is about – here, I'll just read it. It's very quick. We just finished our interviewing a group of firefighters trying to contain a sprawling blaze, and after bouncing down a rocky road, we hit pavement. That's when I heard the familiar thump, 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 and I turned to the driver, the photographer who was driving, saying, "I think we got a flat." The back left tire on his Toyota pickup truck was hissing like a snake. The jack had been built for a smaller car. So while we searched for rocks to prop it up, an SUV pulls over. And the guy says, "Any help?" He's an older man behind the steering wheel. "Need any help?" Then the truck driver pulled over. He was pulling a load of timber. A man with tattoos all over his arms and legs hopped out. Within minutes, he'd found a better place for the jack, lying on the ground to push it into place. Three or four other cars drove by and stopped while we were stuck. Every driver stopped to offer assistance, every single one. And the article says such kindness is no panacea for climate change or mega blazes, but it does show that Australia has depths of something it need not recover from this horrific fire season, thoughtfulness and empathy. I loved that story. And I put it aside specifically so I could say it tonight on Murray Talk.
I like that. Wasn't
that great?
Hear that on TV. Don't hear that on the radio, on the news, because it's not, terrible news. It's good news. So I like that. Everybody stopped. That's cool.
Every single person stopped,
Wow.
God bless them. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right,
very cool.
Here's the animal story I was looking for. Okay, this is called...
Okay.
Do you know what a trilobite is? It's a kind of an animal. Trilobite, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Add pseudo thumb in quotes to the II lemur's bizarre anatomy. Now, the II is an odd looking animal. And in the strange creature's palm, they found a pseudo thumb. This is no longer a usable thumb, but they have identified it in numerous of the same species, and it shows that at one point they did have a thumb, and so they had opposable fingers. The article comes from the New York Times again, and it shows a picture of the ugliest little thing you ever saw. You know those contests for ugly strange cats? That's what this guy looks like. but he's not a cat.
You call him? Okay.
Yeah, A-Y-E-A-Y-E. I-I.
Y-E. Okay, yeah. Okay.
A lemur.
Uh-huh.
Lemur, I guess some people say. But he has enormous ears, a bushy tail, mammary glands between its legs for some reason, and white hairs that bristle when it's agitated. Has a vampiric nose, like a vampire, a mouth of incisors that never stopped growing his whole life, candy corn colored eyes that glow like full moons, gangly fingers that look kind of like Yoda's fingers, are capped in curl like claws that punctuate its hands. The middle finger is a spindly stick that rotates on a ball and socket joint. Sometimes it folds over and even longer fourth finger emerges. These guys eat stuff where they stick their middle finger in the hole in the tree, and they pull it out, little bugs and stuff.
Right.
So they found that by doing X-rays of these animals, a whole series of them, live animals, that this is not just a anomaly with one or two of them, but it's common, and that they now know that the pseudo thumb, is what they call it, even has a fingerprint on it. I find this fascinating. Animals are fascinating. You know, we think we know a lot about anatomy and so forth. We don't. You know, and every now and then something like this just sticks out, and it makes no sense to anybody. And it's a real head scratcher. How did this guy develop, and why? You know, most animals would keep the thumb. That would be found. I mean, we find it very useful, right? Advanced mammals like apes and so forth. We all have opposable thumbs. Thank God. That's how we can climb trees and open things and use tools and everything else. I guess at some point nature said, well, this guy doesn't really need a thumb. I'm getting rid of it. And over time, it disappeared down into the body of the hand. But there's a nub of it still there, which you can see on X-rays and so forth. Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Well, of course, the rest of us don't have the long finger, though, to stick in and pull out ants.
It's too bad, because that could be very common. That would be very practical, don't you think, sometimes?
I don't know.
Maybe
you'd
get it caught
there
in a lot of doors. Yeah. I wasn't going
I'm
there
not going
either.
There.
Wow. Wow, Joe. Well, let's put this. Maybe it would make it possible to scratch yourself in the middle of your back, because nobody can reach the middle of their back.
Ooh, that's
high.
That would be good.
Come on.
Okay.
I would love that.
I'd like that. Yeah. That would be good.
The original thumb became just another finger.
Mm-hmm.
The giant panda had a pseudo thumb because it helped with eating bamboo, and the extra digits made moles better diggers too. They have them too, but it's very rare, and finding one in an additional species is shocking, kind of, for a lot of people. Anyway, there you go, animal story. I can talk animals
Thank
all night.
You.
I love animals. Adore animals. I think animals are the best, really. Well, girls are the best, and then animals after that. And I guess I always say men are way down on the list. But anyway, we're stuck on the list somewhere. Trilobite.
Trilobite.
I-I. A-Y-E-A-Y-E. I-I.
So what does that I have to do with a trilobite?
it's a kind of a trilobite, I guess. I guess it's in the category of trilobite.
Well, I look like in the category of a lemur rather than a trilobite.
Well, genus and species and, you know, and so forth. There's a list of way we define life, you know, and then there are subcategories of all these categories too. So I don't know how it works exactly. It is fascinating though. I did find biology fascinating. Not chemistry, but biology. I love biology. There was one time I had several hundred mice all at once in a single room that they let me have in a school. It was a building that wasn't used as much anymore because there'd been a fire a few years earlier, and this particular building was due to be torn down. But in the meantime, they did have some offices on the lower floors, including our school's main office, and then some empty classrooms above that, one of which they gave to me because they knew there was this kid that was interested in raising animals and doing some tests in genetics. Well, the principal animal for genetics for me was mice. But it also had, I had rats. I had a owl I raised there once. I had lots of fish and so forth. But I did most of the genetic experience with mice, even wild mice. So we would try and, I would try and crossbreed and keep track of when I took a brown mouse and put it with a white mouse, what happened? And then when I took a wild mouse with a tame mouse, what happened? You know, and I came out with actually, interestingly enough, a green-hued mouse. It had a distinct green, the tip of its, it was sort of brownish, but it was more like a green khaki brown on the, especially the tips of its hairs. If you looked at it from an angle, it was definitely green. It was amazing. And as I recall it, that was part of a breeding between a wild mouse, you know, a field mouse, and domesticated mice. It came out green, and I could repeat that. I actually repeated it. But the cool thing was that my room was directly above the secretary of the school, and every now and then they'd have to come down and pull me out of class because she needed to notify me that one of my mice had fallen through the ceiling and was running around her office, and could I come collect it? I was serious about animals. Even back then, we had 85 dairy cows, and they bred several of them each year. I'd say a dozen calves were born every year, and the calves were so special. I love baby calves. Man, they are cool. They would separate them, and then they'd bring their mothers in, or actually they would milk their mothers and bring the milk to them in like a pail of milk, raw milk, that had a kind of a rubber nipple on the bottom. And the baby cow would just suck on the nipple like it was a bottle. and they were extremely friendly, and they'd suck on your fingers. It was the weirdest sensation, but you could put your like two or three fingers out, and they'd grab onto it, and they didn't really have teeth. They had, you know, gums, and they'd suck on your finger. It was so cool. I loved the baby cows, calves.
Mm-hmm.
So people wonder why I'm weird. Ta-da!
Ta-da! Explained it all.
Okay.
Cool.
A quick story from CNN. There's a story that says teachers who praise see a 30% increase in good behavior from students. Wow. How much money did they spend finding that out?
Yeah.
But apparently the converse is probably true. People who don't praise, you know, their kids do poorly. Well, yeah. Let's do this for each other. Okay, let's praise each other, for goodness sake. That's a purple issue. You know, and certainly take into account that not all kids are created equal. Perhaps the kid is trying as best he can. Perhaps there's something going on in his life. But give him some praise somewhere, or her, give them some praise somewhere, and it will probably increase their behavior. It'll make their behavior better because they won't feel as preyed upon, as identified as not as good, worthy as others and so forth. Please, teachers, and all of us, let's do this with our kids too. Let's praise our kids rather than point out their deficits. It'll increase their good behavior, and they will do better in school and so forth as well. That was an article they devoted some time to from CNN, which I thought, okay, well, I'm going to talk about it, but that's enough. I mean, it's kind of self-evident to me. But, hey, thank you, CNN, for at least considering it important enough to say it. Here's another one, which is a little more, little different. Also from CNN, though, and this will probably be the last thing we'll get to. There is a CNN article that I saved to put aside that said that people lie to seem more honest. Now, this was a study. One of the reasons they lie is to seem more honest. Research suggests that people will lie to keep up appearances or to maintain a good reputation. Well, again, that's not such shocking news, but they already knew there were a number of reasons that people lie. Usually it has to do with getting ahead, of course. But they gave an example. They said, picture this scenario. You frequently drive to work and you can be compensated for up to 400 miles per month. You also know that people you work for typically drive 280 or 300 miles a month. But this month you drove exactly 400 miles. How much of that do you think you'd claim as an expense? All 400, you say? Well, a team of people from Hebrew University in Jerusalem used that question and a bunch of others to figure out why people lie. And they found that 12% of the respondents underreported the distance they drove. Even though they drove 400 miles, they said they drove 384. Another 100 separate adults in the U.S. said that they would report if they would report that they'd driven 300 miles, or 301 miles actually was the number. But why wouldn't people say they honestly drove 400? That's the maximum you can ask for, but if you drove 400, why not ask for it? You don't want to seem that greedy? What's the deal? You know? I don't know.
Weird.
It is weird. Our findings suggest, it says, that when people obtain extremely favorable outcomes, they anticipate other people's suspicious reactions and prefer lying and appearing honest over actually telling the truth and appearing as selfish liars. That's what they think people are doing when they do this. Many people care greatly about their reputation and how they'll be judged by others, and a concern about appearing honest may outweigh our desire to be actually honest. They tested multiple scenarios, including lawyers who claimed billable hours and students self-reporting gambling wins that they made in exchange for money. And in each case, similar outcomes were seen. People lied to come across as a better person, to look like a better person, what they perceived other people would think was a better person. And it's believed they judge others, that people judge others negatively when they report extreme conditions. And this is why, at the root of why we don't report the extremes. We report less in these cases. They're so concerned that they seem dishonest that they'd rather behave dishonest in order to keep their reputation, quote, clean. I mean, come on.
That's circular logic there.
It really is. But apparently this is, part of the case. Why do people lie? And of course people lie, so that they can look better, of course, or to get ahead, or to, increase their self-worth. But in this case, you're doing damage to yourself by lying so you didn't appear. So what it says is selfish. It's not selfish. It's just, accurate. When you drive 400 miles, you're allowed 400 miles. Why not say 400 miles? Because you don't want to appear selfish. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So these are the kinds of stories. I'm fascinated by stuff like this. Where did this where did this stuff come from? I also put aside one more article I'm going to mention. This is about psychedelics. We got 3 minutes left here, so quickly. It's a study of, well, it was a history of how psychedelics came to be. You know, they were invented by or discovered by accidentally by a guy who was doing something else, and he put it aside. And then later, a long time later, he by mistake imbibed a small amount of this substance that he had created by mistake and put aside, and he took the first trip. it's true. This guy, I think it was 1939, invented psychedelics by mistake. So now there's a whole history of, you know, the first trip on LSD, as I say, being in 38 or 39. It happened in, there we go. An ad jumped up and started talking. He was in Switzerland. He was a Swiss scientist. Okay, now, jumping forward. He didn't realize what had happened, by the way. He tried to observe as a neutral observer what was happening to him, but he half shouted insanely and blabbered incoherent words. Anyway, he didn't realize what was happening. He was tripping. The golden era of psychedelics was, of course, when it became in the late 50s and the 60s popularized by celebrities, one of whom was Cary Grant. He took 100 trips, and there was articles written about his trips in that time period in the late 50s in Vanity Fair, for example, and also in, what was the other one? Look magazine. And they wrote this up. And then shortly thereafter, you came to the point when Harvard psychologist Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert, who later became known as Baba Ramdas, started experiencing with psilocybin. And began to encourage students to take it along with them and to study it and so forth. And that was the real heyday of psychedelics.
Mm-hmm.
It was declared illegal in 1966. And signed in into the Substance Control Act as a banned substance in 70 under Nixon. But now it's becoming popular again to try psychedelics of different kinds experimentally, both in Germany again and the U.S. And they're using not only LSD, but also the mushroom-type psychedelics that we've discovered since. And it's seriously being studied now as an alternative for mental health, as a mental health ingredient, you know, an ingredient in certain people's, you know, prognosis or what it's called, to give certain people who have, you know, extreme depression, anxiety thing and so forth. So, I don't know, because I did trip quite a few times, and a lot of mine were because I was not a comfortable young man back then. I don't remember having a good trip. I was pretty upset most of the time, and my friends who were tripping with me would have to say, "Calm down, we're here with you. You know, you're going to be okay." But I suppose if I'd already been in a better mindset, and certainly if I'd been led by not friends who were also tripping, a trained psychologist or something, it might have made a difference. I don't know, but MDMA, which is also known as ecstasy, is one of the things that they're using in addition to the mushrooms and the psilocybin. So I thought it was a cool story. I don't know where it goes, but I'm not going to try it because I'm afraid of it, to be honest. But hey, who am I to say what's right and wrong for you?
Yeah.
All right, that's all the time we have, Joe. Good
show.
Goodness. Solid show. Unfortunately, nobody else called in, but that's their loss. They can listen to it later in the archives, of course. And we'll be doing this show next week on Wednesday at the same time for 90 minutes. Joe Koch, thank you very much for being here. With less than 60 seconds left, all I have time for is to sign off by saying, please do go to murraytalk.com. Check out the Purple Life Coaching services we have there, as well as the radio podcast, where I will list the upcoming show as shortly as tomorrow. And in the meantime, may God bless you and the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse.
Blog Talk Radio.